Here at the Planning Podcast, we believe that half of financial literacy is about knowledge. Now that other half, now that's about lifestyle. It's where you live. It's the way you move. So together, we are going to demystify this good old world of finance and wealth building through our intentional guests and dialogue. Make sure you subscribe, stay tuned, and of course, stay planned. My good friend, Megan, how are you doing today?
I am doing well. I love your intro, by the way. That was so good. Whoever put that together did a great job.
Say no more. We can get our people with your people, you know, and see what we can do.
Sounds good.
Well, of course, thank you for your time today. There is so much that I can share when it pertains to your background, but I would just love for you to use your words for your introduction. So what would you like the world to know about you?
Sure. So I, biggest student loan nerd, I've been talking a lot today, so my voice is already like scratchy, so excuse me. But huge student loan nerd, that's my specialty. I specifically help people navigate their student loan debt. And that's federal. Usually it's the federal side of things because that's where things get really complicated. But also private student loans and just helping people incorporate that into their overall financial plan, because it's usually the biggest elephant in the room, I would say, before they start diving into planning. So, but that's a little bit about me. And I have my own coaching practice that, you know, I work with folks on their student loan planning and then the foundational areas of planning. But you let me know if I miss anything that you would have said.
I would just add outstanding, fantastic, amazing individual. Megan and I, we were able to join together on a presentation for a group of pharmacists. And so they were blown away just with her specialty when it pertains to student loans. But also just the applicable information that she was able to share. So I was just honored to be able to share the stage with you in that moment. So I think you hit it on the head with that.
Oh, well, thank you. I look forward to this. I'm really excited to, well, this will come out later, but we're doing this in the last couple of days of 2020. I'm glad to spend the last couple of days with you.
That's right. That's exactly right. And as you know, student loans, It's a hot topic when it pertains to some of the, you know, government conversations. Hey, what's going to happen when it pertains to forgiveness? What's going to happen when it pertains to, some of the deferment of payment? So there's a lot of moving parts. So like you said, this is a perfect time for us to really just start from a macro level of student loans and then dive into some of the micro aspects of it. So during our time today, I think what will be helpful, and nine times out of 10, we're probably going to have to do a part two. But during our time today, I want to walk through a journey, right? So we have pre-college is going to be part of the journey. Then we're going to have during college is one aspect of the journey. And then, of course, once you graduate college, all right, that's when you start having to take care of some of those responsibilities. So now that you've been able to help a number of households, you know, of course, they've already graduated college. Now they're working. Now they're knocking down student loans, or at least attempting to. I'm pretty sure when they meet with you, there is that consistent, you know what, if I would have known about, you know what, if someone would have told me about X, Y, and Z, this would have been a bit more beneficial with my situation, for my situation. Which tips would you provide for someone considering taking on student loans prior to enrolling into college?
Yeah. And you always hear it, and I'm sure you get it in planning too. Like there's just that consistent, man, if I knew this before, or if I knew this 5 years ago, or if I knew you, 10 years, whatever it is, man, right. I would be a rich person if I had a dollar for each time that I heard that. But, you know, I think when it comes to pre-planning for college, you have undergraduate degrees, you have graduate degrees. Undergrad, I think the name of the game is really just to reduce the cost of your education as much as you can. The cost of attendance for undergrad is far less typically than a graduate school program. And if you're just going for an associate's or a bachelor's degree, make that as inexpensive as you can. And that can be through a series of scholarships, working through your school experience. I did that. I worked full-time all through my bachelor's degree, and that helped pay for my living expenses. And that's sometimes what people have to borrow for. But in undergrad, you know, there's not that expectation like in grad school that you can't work during your education, unless you're an athlete. I know you probably have a totally different perspective on that side of things, because I know there's no time if you're an athlete, but you probably got some nice scholarships.
Yeah. Well, and you know, it's funny you mentioned that. My introduction to student loans was really once I got into the business. You know, I'm grateful. I do have some injuries to show for, but I was able to get a full scholarship, mm-hmm. right? And mm-hmm. even if you were able to or if you had aspirations of work, that was pretty much shot down by coach, because they didn't want anything to take away from your focus or for something, you know, for you to get hurt, you know, doing something else. And so ideally, you know, we would like to work, but we did see a number of situations where guys that may have walked on, next thing you know, they're coming to practice, you know, smelling like Taco Bell. You know, they got a job on the side and they're mm-hmm. taking care of business at the same time. So that's a good point. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to throw that in there.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you can work through your college experience, I think it helps you financially speaking, because you can help subsidize the cost of your program. And two, it gives you a lot of experience that could be very valuable post-graduation, because I feel like the value of a degree, everyone has a degree now. So how do you stand out? It's either you're a very exceptional student and or you have some really unique experience that sets you apart from your peers. And so if you are doing internships or working in maybe a not exactly the profession you're maybe going to school for, but something that gives you some kind of advantage with customer service or sales or something, that brings another, you know, I think that's a huge benefit. So off on a tangent, but I think working could be beneficial. Now, graduate programs are very different. They do many of them encourage you not to work, and you really don't have time if you're going to school to, you know, be a pharmacist or a chiropractor or a dentist, physician, you know, an attorney. You know, that's your job, school, right? And to get good grades so you can be successful. So you can borrow up to the cost of attendance in a graduate program. So my rule of thumb really for undergrad too is if you have to borrow, go federal, because federal student loans will have the most flexibility on the repayment side of things. Private loans will sometimes have lower interest rates, so they might look enticing, but there are no income-driven options or no forgiveness options associated with private loans. So if you value some flexibility post-graduation, which I always do in planning, I would go federal, because you can always refinance later. So that would maybe be the biggest rule of thumb, is go federal and then post-graduation, get a plan together for the loans. Yeah.
That's good. That's some really good insight there, because I think, you know, when those are anticipating making that decision or in the process of making a decision, the natural tendency is to look at what is the lowest interest rate, right? And not look mm-hmm. at the type of flexibility that it can provide along the way. So that's really good feedback. Really good feedback. All right. So now we're in college, right? So you made a comment about students having to live off of their student loans in some form of fashion, right? If they're able to offset it, if they can work, if they could offset it by particular scholarships. But sometimes, oftentimes, a portion of those proceeds are, you know, taking care of some of those Chipotle meals, you know, or our DoorDash and Grubhub accounts that's been racked up in the midst of this pandemic. So when we think about the responsibility that students have in college, but also the commitment they made prior to college when it pertains to their finances, you know, what are some tips that you would share with these students that are currently in college that will better position themselves in the best manner prior to graduation?
That's a good question. And I applaud anybody who's in school right now listening to this. I think, you know, great job so far. But so some tips I would say here is, you know, if we're using aid or not, like if we are working, but maybe we have a credit card going through school, don't get into the habit of using debt to subsidize your lifestyle. Just don't get into the habit of it. And I say this because I know it happens. I went to college with, you know, girls I went to high school with, and, you know, they got their student loan. They call it a refund. So when the student loans go straight to tuition, the student gets whatever's left over to live off of for that semester, that part of the year. And when they got their refund, it was, hey, let's go out. Let's go to the bar. Right.
That's right.
And it's hang on. And I didn't understand it at the time, but I know that still happens today. Like, you know, and it's exciting to get a couple thousand dollars that you can, you know, your parents don't tell you what to do with. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, like, and I use the Chipotle example in my presentations because that, you know, and it's, I'm not picking on Chipotle, but I love Chipotle. But if you bought Chipotle with that, you know, loan money, you're paying a premium on it because you're not just paying the $8 it is for the bowl without guac. You are paying $8 plus the interest accrual for however long it takes you to pay it off. And you're in school for 4 years usually. So that's 4 years of interest accrual. And then post-graduation, if you take 10 years to pay it off, I mean, that's a very expensive Chipotle bowl when you look at like the math behind it. So I would say that's my biggest tip. Just don't get used to living off of debt. I mean, I know you will maybe have to live and survive through school, but post-graduation, have a plan, you know, don't live off of loans or credit cards. That's the biggest thing I would say.
That is, we actually had the privilege of interviewing Tyrone Ross, and he would consider that hashtag free jewelry. That is a powerful statement, because as soon as you said it, it made me think about some of the ways in which we frame, right, activities, the way in which we define certain activities. Prime example, I'm all about people being able to go from destination A to destination B in the fastest manner possible. So I support people purchasing vehicles, right? But oftentimes we see a picture of a new vehicle on social media, and it's like, hey, I bought a new car. And I'm like, that's the bank's car. You missed three payments. We'll figure out whose car that is real quick. You know, and so I think the same way in which we look at the refund, right? Like even the way in which it's categorized, refund is essentially money that was already owed to me in some form or fashion. But ultimately, you're going to have to pay that money back, to your point. So they have to be very mindful on how we categorize these dollars so we can make sure that as we use them, we're not saying, you know, go on a, you know, a water diet while you're in college, but we just want you to be mindful on some of the purchases that you make, because it's still under the umbrella of a student loan with interest tied to it. Mm-hmm. Is that fair?
Oh yeah, that's a great way to frame it and to round out that thought. Good job.
Appreciate that. All right. So let's talk about this. Unfortunately, and you know it, you see it on the front line, you're in the industry. Some of our biggest heroes that are on the front line of when I feel like advancing our generation, one after another. And that's our teachers, that's our educators, right? So they sacrifice themselves when it pertains to student loans and getting further in their education to make sure that they can provide an educational experience for, you know, my son and daughter that will be coming up through their ranks. But unfortunately, their income does not allow them to really, to be honest, realistically think about eliminating their student loans. Like there's some situations to where their salary, you know, you just kind of like, hey, you know, what else you looking to get accomplished, right? Like it's just so overwhelming based off of the numbers. What strategies or recommendations would you share to help best address the balances of those educators and teachers?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I wish I could be in like every school to talk to teachers about the value of public service loan forgiveness and teacher loan forgiveness that you can pursue as an educator. Mm-hmm. And these programs are designed specifically for people working in public service, which for a public school district, that counts. If you're working at a nonprofit school or a 501c3 or any other government entity, anything where the IRS deems your employer is tax exempt qualifies for a program called public service loan forgiveness. And this is really great for folks whose balances are, like you said, overwhelming compared to their annual income. And we're not, if we're pursuing this, essentially you want to make 120 qualifying payments towards this program, and whatever balance is left over is then forgiven. And so 120 payments shakes out to be about 10 years if you're consistent with your work and your payments. So it's the biggest bang for your buck when someone has a lot of debt and they're working off of a teacher's salary.
Now, uninterrupted payments, right? So you can't make a payment and then stop and then start back making payments. It has to be uninterrupted, or can you kind of piece it together and say, I've done 10 years of payments?
You could piece it together. So, and you know, there's lots of misconceptions around this program. So the more technical way to think about it is you need to make 120 total qualifying payments. It doesn't matter if you get those payments within, I mean, if you're perfect, 10 years is the timeline. But if you miss a couple payments, if you go into forbearance, or if you take a year or two off of work, but then come back, you don't lose the payments that you've already qualified in the past. You'll just pick back up where you left off. So maybe it takes you like 15 years to get to forgiveness. But you don't lose any of your payment history unless you were to do something like consolidate midway through, which there wouldn't be a reason for you to do that. So it's a really great option. And it's a lot less, you know, I think PSLF gets a lot of slack in the media simply because I think it's a very misunderstood program. And it's also kind of new in the sense that it was started in 2007. So the first time we could have seen anybody get the forgiveness was 2017. And there are boxes we need to check. Just like with anything, we have to do the due diligence on our loan situation to make sure we qualify for this. And if we don't, you know, there are ways that we can fix that. But you have to take charge of your student loan situation to make sure that you're on pace. But it's a great program. Another for teachers is called Teacher Loan Forgiveness. I'm talking about this second because it's really more valuable for people who have lower student loan balances. And why I say that is after 5 years, this is where the consecutive part comes in. It's for teacher loan forgiveness, but teacher loan forgiveness, you have to be working for 5 consecutive years at a Title I school or a high need school. And you have to either be, a highly qualified teacher, which most folks qualify for with a degree. And you get $5,000 lump sum of forgiveness after the 5 years for any subject taught. You get $17,500 of forgiveness if you teach math, science, or special ed. So that could be nice for folks who have smaller balances that would just pay it off by the time they got to 120 payments for PSLF. But if your balance is much greater than $5,000 or $17,500, it's probably better to go towards PSLF because you can't do them at the same time, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So yeah, those are some great options for those folks.
Well, I'm just going to put another hashtag and put free jewelry on that. Again, that is actually really good information. Because again, as you mentioned, there's so much misinformation around the public student loan forgiveness and that program. I know Forbes had an article that came out that was a bit shocking in the title, but it doesn't necessarily talk about some of the details in which you just mentioned. So thank you for clearing that up. And I know for a fact we're going to have to do a part 2 and 3. Just knowing the number of educators and teachers that are, one, adjusting to the virtual presentation of what they do. But two, hopefully for us to be able to capture them in this moment and inform them and equip them with this information. And so that's extremely valuable. Mm-hmm. All right. So before we close, as you can see, at the bottom of the screen, you can see it says the Planning Podcast. Now, the outlier there is that instead of seeing an A, there is a delta sign. And so what planning means to us, and so when we think about any significant change in life, we feel like the foundation of that is through planning. And through mathematics, when you look at the definition of delta, it actually represents change. So hearing the definition of planning through this prism, through this podcast, can you share with us an example on how planning has been beneficial for you in your life?
Oh, like me personally or for a client case?
Let's do both. I think we have time.
Okay. Well, let me talk to a client case first, and this will piggyback off of just our last topic around teachers and loan forgiveness. Okay. So I recently worked with a teacher who borrowed for herself, but also borrowed for her son. And you can do that with what's called Parent Plus loans. They're federal loans. And she had upwards of six figures. She had more than six. Well, she had, I think it was about $115,000 of student loan debt on a teacher's salary. So probably about $45,000, $50,000. And she had ignored these loans for a long time. So she had done no planning around these loans, and they were causing a lot of stress and anxiety. She had gotten to the point where they were going into default because she couldn't afford the payment. And so she reached out, and we walked through the value of public service loan forgiveness and how that, including her son's loans that were under her name, could qualify for PSLF as long as we converted the loans into the correct type. So we went through that process together. We got her on the right repayment plan, and her monthly payment was going to be based off of income. So they were at first telling her payment was going to be, you know, $1,500 a month, and she's not making enough. That's rent or a mortgage payment right there for her. But we got her on an income-driven plan, and her payment was going to be under $200. And based on her circumstances. And what was great about that is she planned on being a teacher until retirement, and she wasn't close to retirement yet. She had maybe another 15, 20 years to go, she thought. And so we were going to pursue PSLF with her. And so she's only going to be making payments, you know, based on income for the next 10 years. And then whatever balance is left over is forgiven. It's not going to be taxable to her at that time. So, you know, she went from thinking that she was going to have to, you know, file bankruptcy, or, you know, this was really going to be a struggle to pay off, to having a plan to where she could make payments. They were affordable. She had a plan to tackle this in a very efficient way. And that also allowed her to open up, you know, there was a big conversation about how she hadn't been able to save, or this was causing her to feel like she couldn't save for anything else, like retirement. And, you know, this also brought up the topic of, well, you know, now that our payment is very manageable, we could start putting money towards your retirement to set yourself up. So, you know, that was a really cool example, I felt like, because a lot of folks' situations, looking at it themselves, might feel really overwhelming, and you might want to ignore it forever. It you know, might just really be a scary situation, but really when we start planning and we start putting together an actionable plan, my goodness, like your life could change in a phone call, really.
Right. That's right. That's good.
So I think, you know, that might be a good example, from a client perspective, I would say. But if we have time, I'll think of something I could throw in there for planning. I don't know. Do you think?
We'll save it. I think that is actually an excellent example. I do want to squeeze a few questions in, just quickly squeeze.
Yep.
All right. So It's been a whole lot of chatter about, hey, $50,000 worth of forgiveness, $10,000 worth of forgiveness. Mm. And again, it's all chatter as of right now. Let's say that is put in place, and we'll just start with the lower amount, $10,000 of student loan forgiveness. For those that are anticipating a game plan of eliminating their debt themselves, their student loan debt themselves, should they waver from that game plan and wait until Congress comes up with a decision if they're even going to forgive any, or should they stick with that game plan and just see how it goes?
Yeah, that's a good question. And there is a lot up in the air right now. I would say if your game plan is to pay them off right now for federal loans, you do not have payments due. Interest is at 0%. So there is no harm in just putting money in savings and holding off until there's some decisions made here. The payment extension is set to expire right now, January 31st, but I think it's very possible there's going to be another extension. And, you know, you might already know this by the time this airs, but, Biden is very interested in, or he has expressed he's interested in postponing payments again. So that could be possible. Right. That just gives you a little more time to figure out if they're going to be doing something. I would say in the next year, we're going to hear something concrete about the forgiveness. And so if you want to hold off, if you want to just, what I would recommend is if payments kick back in, make your regularly scheduled payment, sock money in savings. Throw what you would be throwing towards the student loan into savings and just see. And if you don't have confidence that there's going to be forgiveness, just pay it off. You know, there's no harm in that route either. But if it's starting to look like there is that opportunity, I would just bank money in savings. And if they don't, just throw that money onto the balance at that time and pick up and accelerate from there. That's what I would suggest.
That's good. That's good. Last question. And this is something that we would always say, run this by your accountant. If there is a forgiveness bill put in place, is that something they should anticipate some type of tax implications from that as well?
As of our current tax code, yes. And so this is really interesting because if they change that, so if any balance is forgiven right now, our current IRS tax code would tax you. So if you got $10,000 forgiven, you would be sent a 1099-C for that $10,000 and have to pay income taxes on it. If they change that for student loans, that can change a lot of things because one, you won't be taxed on the forgiveness now. But it also changes the fact that the longer term forgiveness, which we didn't really talk about today, which might be part two or three, whatever we do later. But the longer term forgiveness on an income driven plan is taxable as of right now. But if they eliminate it, there we go. That's gone too. So that could be a really big thing if they did that. But I would, they're going to have to clarify if that's going to be taxable or not if that comes through. So I would just keep posted to the updates there.
This is good. Megan, I am always grateful to share space with you. This has been a fantastic, fruitful conversation. I know folks will be able to walk away with a ton of information and jewelry to put in their pockets. So thank you again for your time, your expertise. If you want to get in contact with Megan, you can see her name there. A quick Google search and you'll see all the articles and interviews that she's done. She's a powerful leader in this space, powerful woman in this space. So salute to you, my friend. Thank you again for your time.
Thank you. This was a pleasure. I always enjoy getting together with you.
Let's do it. Well, yeah, we're going to have some different parts of this because there's so much to unpack. And then once Biden gets into place, we'll see some of the changes that they make and then just continue to enlighten our audience. And so again, thank you for your time and expertise. And to our audience, make sure you stay planning.